Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
With a discography that embraces South African homegrown genres, from Amapiano and Ngom to her own pioneering style dubbed Future Ghetto Funk, musician and creative visionary Moonchild Sonelli has from the outset blazed her own unique trail. She is known for her vibrant, inimitable style, affirming lyricism and storytelling. Following the success of her award-winning debut studio album Rabulapa in 2015, and the genre-crossing sophomore album Phases in 2022, the self-described musical shapeshifter is back with the release of her new studio album Full Moon in January of 2025. Her journey from the Durban poetry scene and pool parties of Johannesburg to international stardom is one driven by an innate creativity, unique self-expression, and extraordinary confidence, as well as a knack for teaming up with like-minded artists. A self-confessed collaboration whore, she's known to many as the firebrand whose vocals livened up Beyoncé's My Power on the Lion King soundtrack in 2019. She has collaborated with artists from Ezra Collective to Steve Aoki and Getz to Gorillaz, and is currently bathing in the afterglow of the hugely successful Big Man, one of 2024's songs of the summer, penned alongside British star Self-Esteem. Her unforgettable live performances have seen her play to crowds from SXSW in Austin, Texas, to Primavera Sound in Barcelona, with a staggering 10 performances across Glastonbury Festival this year alone. I have interviewed Moonchild on the red carpet at a couple of events, and the natural next progression was to interview her for the podcast. Up next on Celeb Savant is Moonchild Sonelli. Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
Hi, thank you for having me, I'm in Johannesburg and I am doing great. Just going to get rid of this flu wave that's happened. It's literally like, it's like flu just on the throat. And just getting rid of that before we go back on tour. But I'm all good and nice. I'm like in my rest zone before I go back and do my back-to-backs.
So you know what the red zone is, I call it, is that hoosa. You know when you do that hoosa?
Like when I'm home, especially in my bedroom. I mean, look, it even matches my hair color. And hop into studio, do all the Zooms. But I'm generally like, I'm literally in my bedroom and I'm relaxed. I'm really relaxed.
How did the name, the stage name Moonchild Sonelli come to be? How was that choice chosen?
That one was one of those things where I literally translated the gift my mom had, which was like the gift of clairvoyancy, so she could see stuff before it happened and all that jazz. In Xhosa, the healer and the moon share one name, which is Inyanga. So because it's one name, I could go and be the moon child, because when you translate it, I'm a child of a healer anyway. So meanwhile, in English, it's either the healer or the moon, but the moon heals too. So anyway, I use my main name as my surname, Sonelli, which is the shortened version of Sonelli Siwe.
Ah, okay. Thank you. The hair. Let's go to the hair. Is that not hot? Or does it not drive you crazy at any time, or you're just used to it?
I'm so used to it because it was a form of expression and a part of my rejection when I was looking for deals and just backing in my music. And because it was a form of expression, it was just like a part of me, never necessarily a marketing strategy. In fact, people doing marketing in labels didn't understand it because there was no reference. And because it's who I am, I can never be tired of who I am. It's a part of who I am because naturally you wouldn't really see me with hair. I started coloring my hair from when I was in high school. And I was allowed to. And so me elevating to be able to create stuff where I can even have the confidence to patent, because I believe in my creativity, is because of having been allowed to be expressive from a very young age. So I always just went for more and just played, actually, without any limits.
I loved what you said a moment ago. I can never be tired of who I am. I love that. I needed to hear that today. So thank you.
You're welcome.
So now let's rewind. At what age, whether as a child or teenager, did you feel cool? I want to be creating, I want to be in this world. And how did that journey progress?
I don't necessarily think of the moment specifically when I was younger, because part of my playtime was creating stage performances, whether it was dancing or stealing Spice Girls songs to put my own melodies and sing along with my crew, calling ourselves Beps Girls because there was Spice Girls. There wasn't any, I'm sure there is a moment where it was like, okay, you're going to pursue this. But because my upbringing was filled with a lot of art, whether it was modeling, singing or dancing, those things were things that were, that surrounded me. Outside of that, my family danced before me. Outside of that, my family was the leaders in church choirs and led the church vocally. So music was always like a norm, and my like artistic expression was actually a norm where I come from, both from my grandmother's side and my mom's home. And so being exposed to that, it becomes a part of who you are. So you do see yourself as an artist. And it was when I went to matric, I didn't necessarily just decide, because I was always expressive and allowed to be through art. So when I was going to go to varsity, me choosing between music and fashion, which were things that I just naturally did, my mom was like, go do fashion because you can sing and be able to have skill anyway, because you kill both, you know. And yeah, she supported me doing fashion, and I went to study that while I was at fashion. I mean, it's a fashion designing that the skill, in fact, outside of just the creativity, because even creativity, once you get the skill, you're even able to elevate it even further. But you can't necessarily be taught how to be creative. When I went to it, that's literally, so me studying fashion has literally set me apart from all my peers with regards to before I make money from music, I'm able to carve a signature, which in turn becomes a brand before the money comes. And so fashion has allowed me the privilege to set and create my entire image without anybody being able to control it, because I see my head and I bring it to life without thinking of many costs, like going to a designer, charging that, and all that. It's eliminated so much and has helped mold my brand.
So you make all your clothes?
Absolutely.
I've always said, whenever I've seen you, it's like, I love your style. Now it's nowhere to be seen but in Moonchild's cupboard.
So I made my own clothes. I did my own hair. I did my, like, I'm a creative. Yeah. And it's so beautiful how fashion has literally then contributed in me being able to make money to go and build my profile before making money from the music. Because you make money from a dress and you can go to the show where you get two drinks in a glass. And you the whole thing is about being hungry for and building your profile. And so it's so crazy and beautiful that each has supported the other consistently.
So do you also design and make clothes for other people?
I used to create images for some industry people back then, before I got popular with my music. And outside, I've dressed Toya DeLazy, and I think I was still back in Durban. I didn't even move to Joburg then. I mean, Toya DeLazy, I created a costume she would style herself. So I'd send her stuff that I'd created. DJ Doo-Wop, I also helped create her entire image, which is now more colorful than before, because prior, she had a very like Rita Ora type expression. Yeah. And when I came in, I added the color and she flew with it. I've created Musiswa's outfits even before the weight loss. Anytime she looked sexy while she was still a big girl, I'm the only one who managed to highlight her great parts and make her look and feel sexy, instead of all what the other designers did and give her a parachute without shaping, because she's got a beautiful body. I've definitely done, and then I've got my consistent clientele that I had. But right now, because what the intention of the fashion was with the time frame that I put for it, which is when the music pops, my image will always be in check and all that jazz. I will come to it, because right now there's not enough time. I don't have time to focus on client-to-client basis. That come, and I feel like by the time I do it again, it will be based on like capsule ranges and exclusivity instead of mass. But with regards to collaboration, I am here for the mass, which is just less admin for me, but still having the power to create outside of just being a face of a range, but being a designer with a face in music. That's where I'm looking. And it's Puma, to be specific. I always put my things out in the universe. Yes. So right now, the only thing I do with regards to my fashion, I've done with my merchandise, especially with the international audience, merchandise is such a big thing because people hold on. And that's been going so amazing. And that what I've been pushing literally for the past 2 years, it's been going so good because the festivals, it keeps getting better. And even the solo tours that I do, like the first leg I just did, having sold out shows without it being a part of a festival, just as Moonchild Sanelly, it's just been the progress over the years. And the merchandise is just flying through. And because it's been a favorite, and this the work, the stuff that we've got right now, it's a collaboration between myself, a print artist who also exhibits a lot, and a photographer who's also pretty popular. And it's every, and from one is from the UK and one is from somewhere in Europe. And all three of us, and then the artist from Africa, the model, pretty much. And so that print has been going so, it's been doing so well during tour. Like, we've been running out of stock. It's been ridiculous. And so once you tap into that kind of market, it also even takes away the pressure of having to do individual, you without ignoring your other part, because my biggest client is me. Dominating that creativity part, which is just like you first, people still get a piece of you, but there's different forms. You don't have to just doing the sweat part. It doesn't have to necessarily just be factory-based, the creative processes. And just like how I am in my collaborations in music, which is like my biggest language, I feel like this one is also a sign of it translating into the fashion, where it's also collaborative.
I know it's you were doing this previously and may come at a later stage again, but when you get a person who asks for your assistance in their brand and then creating their image, what is your process in seeing their potential and highlights? Is it different for each person, or is there something within your brain that says, this is what I'm seeing?
It's what they're about. So the research is usually like their personality. Where do they see themselves? What they've been about? What they want to add? Because some of them are just like, okay, let's go. But there's always some reference to know, okay, how far am I taking them? And there's also ones that just give you the freedom to just fly. So it depends from client to client, because I've seen also with some clients, one of the biggest things, satisfactions I used to get with clients is when someone comes for their fitting and they don't want to take their clothes off because they're not confident in their body. But when they come for the outfit, they're already naked on some, I'm ready. And it's like being able to evoke that confidence through clothes. And that also then just says a lot about just my artistry, because I contribute that same emotion and I evoke it through my music. And I've gotten the experience of evoking it through the fashion. But that part is going to come in its time, because that feeling didn't come from mass production. It came from people feeling my hand. I had a client of mine who used to say, once you mass produce, I'm going to miss this part where I walk into your house, I buy myself a bottle of champagne. When I walk out, I'm dressed and it takes you about 3 hours. And I'm the fastest producer of clothes I know. I'm fast. I'm in my creation. I've been creating for so long. I'm hustling for so long with my creation that I've done 100,000 hours. Because so that's why speed is so easy. It's not easy. So I'm not rushing, because all of it is practice. So I've just been doing it for a long time. It's literally been my hustle to move within the greatness of whichever art, but focusing on my music. And because of that experience in that hustle, it's already also given me an edge in both fields with regards to just speed. I've made a wedding dress, Tebogo Malope, the director. I've made a wedding dress and the bridesmaids' clothes, wedding dress, white wedding and traditional, the brides and the bridesmaids in 24 hours.
Oh, my word.
Comfortable, because she had been my client for so long. She knew my speech. She just came, laid on my bed on the wedding day. We both went to the wedding after I was done with her dress. And it's that crazy, because the people that have experienced me, even with the whatever events, like even industry people, the ones that have experienced my speech, they know that part. So I've also heard that that was an element of magic where people will pay whatever because of that experiencing me. So realistically, right now, I'm still building my global domination with the music. And so for now, what you're going to get from Moonchild Cultway is through collaboration.
You've been building your music to allow it to grow, to expand as it's happening now. Were there any periods of time? I know you were very busy on the fashion side and creating that space. Was there any periods where it was getting a little frustrating for you? It's like, okay, I need to get the music going, or just you were just building it up for this period now?
I've always been building up, and I've always been present in the period I'm building in, knowing where my intentions lie. So I didn't skip steps. I just worked towards my greatness, which was I've always been about my global domination and liberation globally. And so frustrations come with, I feel like, every job. Sometimes you work hard in the office and you don't get the recognition. But what matters the most is you remembering that there's no expiry date to your dreams. And you can't be tired doing who you are. Because if I was exhausted by doing me, whether it came with the rejections of how open my voice is, or how open-minded I am, or how expressive I am, I would be put down by bullies. But I can't be tired of being myself. And therefore, you're just going to have to take me. Because I love me. And I'm here. And the only way you hear me is because I am a motherfucker. And I kill stuff because I'm great at what I do.
You've created this brand and persona of yourself. Why do you feel it's important to have that? And the artists that are not doing it or not understanding the importance of it, what advice would you give them?
The advice I would give people who don't understand, I guess, is not for them at that time. Maybe they're not there yet. And we all steps to fill, and there's always a territory that eats you up because they're there already. Some were born to catch up, some were born to know, some were born to be in the future, and every role matters. So those who don't get it, they're probably not there yet, but they will catch up because all of my existence is liberation and reality. What was the first question?
Why do you feel it's important to create a brand persona as part of an artist's image?
I don't know if it's necessary, because with me, I feel like my conversations are offbeat when I am not making a song. When I write, and my relation comes from the fact that I speak how I, what I, my lyrics are how I speak, which is already on its own, its edge. A lot of people think this was me having been expressive. So when you meet me in person, you're going to see all shades of me. For instance, when I talk about all the sexual positions and things like that, that person exists when they feel safe in a relationship. There's no one-night stand that's going to get that moonchild. So I speak about who I am, and this is the part that I feel needs more expression, because my calm self is when I take my energy back, but I've got so much energy. I'm in my purpose, which is why I think I've got energy, which is why I get offered so many drugs after I come off stage, because people cannot fathom the type of energy I have when I smoke weed, and it's just, I was born with it. The reason I can do back to back is because I was born with it. If it was a persona, I'd be exhausted.
Ah, okay.
This is the same image I was rejected for because I was comfortable in my expression of self.
Yes.
This is the same image that got me rejected so many times, so often, that my work had to do the talking for so long, because I could have changed my hair and found a persona that would make the label feel safe. But because I'm comfortable in me being myself, they had to catch up. And therefore, I had to learn to be a savage, independent artist. Hence, I got Beyonce, Diplo, Gorillaz while I was independent. And now I'm operating on a different scale, which is I'm never really signed. I'm always licensing a project to the highest bidder. And therefore, I've come to a level where I know I'm a music manufacturer. And that comes with the ability to make hits in every genre. And therefore, I'm a storyteller. And my storytelling will never live in a box.
Okay, so I'd love your observation of this. I still budget for my CDs every month. I love the journey of the choice, the unpacking, the booklet, the thank yous, listening to song one to whatever number. For me, it's a thank you to you guys for all the hard work that you do. I'm not sure, you may or may not be aware, massive comeback of physical around the world, not necessarily in South Africa, but in the UK, America, vinyls, massive.
I bought a vinyl for every project because my audience that side collects everything.
Yes. Last year in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on, and there need to be high exchanges for a product to be in this basket. And because of the upsurge of CDs again, CDs are now back in the basket, and the research is showing The research is showing it's the teenagers, it's the younger kids driving into this world.
By the time they get to experience it, they're paying even exorbitant prices, because at this point now it's going to be a collector's item. By the time they catch up at home, it's going to be so expensive when the international market has already been rolling on that. There's even cassette, like even Little Sims album right now, it's got cassettes. I've done a cassette range and people wear them as necklaces and collector's pieces. And it's fucking crazy, because the way CDs are going to be coming back, it's like natural bodies and BBLs feeling left out.
But then also, we've got these streaming peoples that consume music on. Beside the physical, what are your observations of the total landscape at the moment?
Streaming is still operating. With what you mentioned, that already gives me a hint of the fact that because it's the kids that also catch up and then introduce things, even in the country, because it's the curious ones. And so it's definitely, the sad part is that it's going to be very expensive for when home catches up. It's already expensive. I didn't realize my vinyl was that much. And they bought the vinyls from there because it's such a, it's a commodity. It's like, unfortunately, it's going to be expensive by the time the youth, because it's going to be based on curiosity and FOMO. And that's because of the lack of experience of having played a CD,
yeah,
having touched a vinyl. I haven't even touched a vinyl. I mean, I've touched my vinyl, but in my generation, we didn't necessarily play vinyls, but there were DJs who were playing vinyls. You know what I mean? And it's the FOMO. The FOMO is going to make it more expensive when it comes back into our market. But in the meantime, people are collecting from other ones that know.
Yes.
Like us. They're getting it from where it's from, and it's going to be way more expensive because it's giving, we might be getting into the auction space, because I know this for a fact that there's a point where globally, the vinyl material ran out. And they had to develop ways of making it with recycled material.
Yes.
And that's because my previous album prior this one. And I'm like, our world doesn't know that. But the international world knows it because they seek it.
So what's happening over the next couple of months? What's happening in your world?
I'm touring summer festivals. Back on tour, my second leg of the tour, which is a festival circuit. And then I come back for another break, re-costume, and then we're out again. So right now I'm going to be doing the in and outs. I really experienced winter at this season. So we're loading. At least we started the year and it went great. So that was a great tone set, especially with the new album. And so we've got the audience singing along. So it's about to just get bigger and better. And it was a great thing that my team put up, that we started with the tour for the new album early before we do the festival circuits, by having the audience sing with us, engage and be a part of the songs, and also just see how the music is doing. And that comes from the audience engagement. So it's been pretty amazing. And I'm just ready for the rest of the year. It's so busy that our global tour manager, he's not taking other jobs because my calendar looks dizzy. I don't even have it on my phone because I am just about the present. And so tell me what you need when you need it and I'm ready.
Yes.
I don't look at it for the year. I'm booked. Okay, cool. Great. Just prepare. Oh, my job is to stay ready, get ready. No, I'll stay ready. Maintain being ready, stay fit, rehearse and make new costumes and then hit the road again. Well, hit the clouds again.
Tell us more about the latest album that was recently released.
This album, I feel like the biggest part for me is having introduced my vulnerable side, because I'm such a liberator that I don't necessarily speak about where it comes from, which is just an introduction of just like the things you deal with on your own. So like songs like I'm Falling, where it's like mirror conversations before I come in and liberate, because that's not my cripple. It doesn't stop me from doing anything, but it's the account. It's the acknowledgement of it.
Yes.
And how I move from it. And so the world usually hears how I move from it. They don't know what it is.
Okay.
So this is a description of what it is, the root of where the branches come from.
So having previously been more focusing on moving the parts moving forward and not what it is and being more vulnerable, was that a little bit challenging this time to dive into that vulnerability, or is just now it's time to do it?
Yes, it's time. It was time. I didn't question anything that was evoked by the production. I just let it happen. I wasn't scared. But that was also, I feel like the readiness and the timing of it was based on me having intentionally seeked therapy because with every legend that I've watched, their exit has usually been self-inflicted because of the fact that it's very easy to write a diary, make art from a dark place. And while you bring light to the world with your art, which came from a dark place, which is your diary, it's easy to forget to remember to now deal with that darkness. Also understandable. Sometimes people don't want to leave the darkness because they feel the creativity only stems from it, and toxicity becomes the entire movement. And sometimes, a lot of the times, when I've watched legends die from narcotics, self-inflicted, and the world asks, but you were in the height, I swore that because I am I'm a legend loading, I'm not going to die like the rest. I'm going to get therapy. And from the moment I could get it once a month, because I was intentional, this album is also a sign that level of comfort that I had with whatever emotion was evoked and go into it. It takes a level of comfort to be able to write from the male's point of view while you had issues with your father, but with forgiveness, being able to empathize and being able to play the characters that are vocal and could tell the stories without emotionally manipulating the man who takes accountability. That takes me forgiving to be able to be in that position. So, you know, when they say if I'm a millionaire, there will be signs. I'm healing, and these are the signs.
So Moonchild, the podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message to the audience, what would you like to say?
I always say there's no expiry date to your dreams. Be rejected for who you are so that you never question when you're seeing the love. And keep going. There's only one you, and literally you only live once. Keep going. My biggest is there's no expiry date to your dreams. Be rejected for who you are, not what you think they want, because it'll always be a job. When you wonder what is in right now. So be rejected for who you are, because you will always be in as long as you're authentic to yourself and you keep going. Every opportunity is an opportunity for change. So don't undermine any opportunities, but build.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.